start this in just about a minute, give everyone a chance that's on the video to reboot. We have a tendency to kick them off. We're going to try it just a minute earlier, so that we can be right on time this evening. Welcome. If you have any questions this evening you'd like to ask as we go through this process on mental rehearsal, please send us a text message to 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. Or you can do so on a Ustream account online if you'd like to. Please feel free to participate. We're going to be talking about mental creation tonight. So thank you for the privilege of being able to do this with you. Just bear with us just for a moment. Waiting just a moment for our viewers to come back on again. And everybody's back. Welcome to Tuesday night and a celebration of life. Tonight we're going to take on quality number 2, mental creation. We'd like to welcome any of those who are visiting with us for the first time. Welcome tonight. Every Tuesday night we take on one of the qualities of an intentional creator. This is an opportunity for us to live intentionally, doing things on purpose. Instead of being subject to the whims of nature, we make a choice about how we'd like to live our lives. We start off with connection with people. In the last 2 Tuesday nights, we spent our time discussing the importance of honoring people, making it about others, and stepping into their world. Og Kyle is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. And he tells us that though we have all the skills and knowledge of the world, if we don't have this, we cannot succeed. We will fail. And I would suggest in today's world, probably more than ever before, it's important that we focus on others, because everyone is so consumed with their own stuff. And we have a tendency, we all have a tendency, to want other people to listen to us and understand where we are. And the great secret is when we shift that and we become the one who's listening to them, we step outside of our world and become the person focused on serving another person, bringing value into their life. This is a great secret of success in all ventures. Now tonight we're going to take on mental creation. This is a very tender topic for many because it's basically saying, what are we doing with our thought processes when we're just thinking about thinking? Are these thought processes healthy, or are they destructive? We've had an opportunity to do assessments, the intentional creation assessment. If you haven't had a chance to take that, we would invite you to certainly take that. If you'd like to spend a few minutes with one of our coaches, let us know, and we'll schedule a time for you to spend 20, 30 minutes with them and review your results. We've done so many of these assessments and interviews. I personally have conducted about 3,500 assessment debriefs and have found some very interesting facts out about these particular thought processes. They're very, very different because they quite often involve what we call our secret desires. These are the thoughts we have when we're by ourselves, with ourselves, and we're reflecting on our life, our very private life. What is it that we really want? What is the difference between what we want and what we have? And what impact is the difference having on our lives? And are we thinking about thoughts that we can actually create? Or are we creating nightmares that will just drive us crazy? That's where we're headed tonight. It's important for us to understand a great principle. And that is that in the process of vivid visualization, and vivid visualization quite often is misunderstood. Some people say, well, I don't see pictures. I'll ask, well, have you ever been on a trip where you've been driving for an hour or two and you pull into a restaurant or a hotel and you can't remember how you got there? Your mind has been somewhere else, thinking about something else. That's vivid visualization. Now, some see more vividly in terms of pictures, images, etc. But it's a preoccupation in our mind that takes us away from the tangible reality where we are today. Where does our mind go? Our body's here. But where does our mind go while we are here? What is it thinking about? This is thinking about thinking, things that exist only in our mind. Well, I want to walk through with you, if I may, the three destructive ways in which we use our mind. And I talk about these first because they're very common. None of us are exempt. In today's marketplace where things are challenging and everybody's trying to figure out solutions for how to create a profitable business, how to raise a family, how to deal with relationship challenges, it's very, very easy to go into these destructive thought processes. I'm going to start with one that I've talked about a great deal. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it tonight. But I want us to become aware of it because it is killing us as a nation. As we watch this debt debate in Washington, D.C., and Boehner's plan, and Reid's plan, and the president's speech, and just all the craziness that's going on, and we look at our nation and we wonder how we got here. I truly believe the part of how we got here was using this mind fantastically to create expectations for how we'd like our life to be. And then we've tried to find ways to finance our way into that experience prematurely. Experiencing that which we have seen so clearly in our mind prematurely, that's not the creation of it, it's just the financing of it. Now, none of us were exempt. And now that we're faced with a little tighter budgets, that puts quite a strain on us sometimes, financially, all of us. So let's talk about this fantasy piece. At the core of this particular destructive use of the mind is an intention. It's an intention that is of such deadly nature that it's antithetical, which means it's the total opposite of anything that has to do with abundance and the creation of abundance, the force of creation that's involved in abundance. It's an offense. It's an affront. It's a prayer, if you will, that can never be answered. That intention is very simple. It's a desire for ease. That's simple. A desire for ease. As defined by, I'd like to have a life that's less stressful, less painful, with no frustration or debt, with time freedom, financial freedom. This utopian place, which frankly doesn't exist on this planet. It sounds kind of appealing at times of frustration, but the truth is it does not exist. It just does not exist. Some people go away to retreats to get away from life and to feel this peace. And that's wonderful because when we go there, we can kind of clear our mind and rejuvenate ourselves to come back and face what's real. Unfortunately, most of us go to places like that to escape. And then when we come back into reality, we're really frustrated with the way it is. Well, it is the way it is. That is what is. That's called life. And life on planet Earth, in our mortal existence, that's what it is. We will get sick. We will have disease. We will have financial reversals. We'll have relationship challenges. We cannot control everyone and everything in our life. As a matter of fact, so much of what we would like to do is contingent on other people performing at a certain level. One of the great gifts we can give ourselves is to face this moment. It's a tough moment to face. It's an emotional moment to face. And for many, it's crippling and crushing and overwhelming because they've invested so much energy in the pursuit of ease that the thought that it might not really be possible is just crippling and crushing. All of us, to a certain extent, want this little peace. And we'll want to shift our intention. Because when our intention is to seek ease, we are going to use our vivid visualization to escape all of this. And we're going to transport ourselves instantly from where we are now to where we want to be. There. We're going to skip all the process, all the work of creation. We don't want this peace. This is boring, mundane, repetitious, hard, burdensome, time-consuming. Feel all that energy? Because when we want ease, we cannot create a vivid visualization, a why big enough to ignite our passion, to do what's between here and there, passion-driven. It is just boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome, time-consuming, laborious. We'll be busy. Oh, I've been trying to do it. I just can't do it. We don't want to do this. We're trying to avoid getting our hands dirty, if you will, in the realities of life. And so we skip from here to a time in the future when we already have all the things that we desire. And then we begin a very dangerous process of living beyond that point with the assumption that this has already happened. Debts are paid, this much in the bank, this much in real estate, this much in stocks, bonds, whatever it might be, home paid for, what kind of home, car, vacation, travel, peace, whatever it might be. We have it, and now we begin the process of living with that. Now that's deadly, because 97% of you on the call tonight have a thought process. It is so vivid, that when we skip into the future and begin this process of living out these pieces, and we've all done it, this isn't an indictment, it's just for us to take a good look tonight, that when we do this, the same brain chemistry and brain circuitry that would fire if we actually owned those things and had that life start to occur in the mind. Neuroscientists call it a mental construct. We could call it a non-negotiable mental monolith. We could call it an expectation, etymologically, a concrete condition for happiness. Non-negotiable. Now, we could step back from that and go, wow, that doesn't make any sense. That's not real. It's just in my mind. But the truth is, it is so real to the mind that the body starts to release norepinephrine. It's a very powerful drug. Makes us feel euphoric and wonderful. We could be reflecting on all the altruistic things we're going to do, all the people we're going to save, all the homes we're going to pay for, all the cars we're going to buy for relatives, all the stuff we can go into. We're going to be having tears streaming down our cheeks. Because our body is so committed to this visual that it's now physically reacting to that visualization as if it's real. Now, we know some more crass examples of this with pornography viewing and the physical reactions. It's not unlike that when we're dealing with fantasy about what it would be like if our life is there. Our body is reacting, and it's releasing chemicals as if we were there, and it feels so wonderful. Now, this particular area of thought is very different than all other areas of thought. It's called systemic thought. These thoughts process dualistically, which means all. Just think what you've been thinking about. It's all. It's everything exactly the way we thought about it, or it's nothing. This is life. What we have here is death. Got that? This is life. Ah, reality's death. Black, white, all nothing. Right, wrong. That's how it processes. So we've set ourselves up for a very dangerous moment in time. Because just as soon as we face tangible reality, we're yanked back into this place. And that can happen with a child that starts screaming, or a credit card statement that we get, or a call we might get from a creditor, whatever it might be. All of a sudden, we've got a flat tire, we've got a battery that's dead, something happens, washing machine breaks down. This week, pipe breaks at one of our rental units. those things happen. And when those things happen, we're now, boom, right in reality. The body has to. It has no option. I'm going to have you do this with me. I want you to just open your eyes. Don't blink. Just open your eyes. Keep them open. Don't blink. I'm going to try to do it with you. It's stinging my eyes. My eyes are stinging. How are yours? Okay, I got to blink. That's an automatic reaction in the body. We can control it to some extent. We can stop the blinking for a period of time. We have some conscious control. Some, not total, but some conscious control. When reality shows up, and we've been living in the future and beyond, norepinephrine coursing through our body, chemistry happening, brain circuitry happening, when reality shows up differently, all or nothing, it goes to nothing. and the body autonomically, that's a great word, autonomically, that means more than automatic, it means something you cannot stop. You cannot think your way out of it. You cannot physically control it. Autonomically, the body responds. It sends cortisol coursing through the body, which is designed to increase metabolism and heal wounds. And since there aren't any bears attacking us and we don't have any wounds, it just makes us feel anxious, that little lightning bolt we get in our gut. And we start to feel uncomfortable and nervous and anxious. Ever had that feeling, that anxious feeling? You know what I'm talking about. Now, we also know that at the top of the brain stem is that little thing called the amygdala, the fight or flight center. And its job in this moment is to shut down all of the energy-rich parts of our brain and centralize all of that energy in the fight or flight center. So we've got energy to jump 10 feet in the air and grab a tree branch or run 50 miles an hour to get away from the bear. Exaggeration, I know. But so we have an enormous focus to flee or to fight. And lastly, the hippocampus shuts down. It's a short-term memory. It's like a bank vault. Door shuts, wheel spins, nothing in, nothing out. This is what happens to us autonomically when we go to this place. And it's not every once in a while. It's every time we go there. It's like drinking alcohol until we pass out. The next morning, there will be a hangover. It's inevitable. Every time we go to the future and start living beyond it, escaping all of this, wanting to get away from it, just, this is what I want, and this is what I want to do with what I want, we are setting ourselves up the next 24 hours to have what Dan Goldman of Harvard calls an amygdala, that fight or flight center, an amygdala hijack. We're emotionally paralyzed. And we will be emotionally paralyzed until those fear dendrites drain off our brain and the cortisol drains out of our body. We feel kind of numb and discouraged and hampered, impeded. We're not thinking clearly. It's very hard to do tough things like make phone calls to cold prospects, etc., when we're in that kind of space because we can't remember what we're going to say. We haven't got the capacity to really show up for them. We haven't got the common sense to think through our business or whatever it is we're doing. We're hampered. We're impeded. And so we probably won't. The pattern has been to go back into this place. Now, not everybody on this phone is going to engage in this process. It's true. However, in today's economy, we're seeing one more trend as it relates to this vivid visualization. Many have not gone into the future to escape. They actually have been doing this constructively, which we'll talk about later today and next week. They go into the future to see possibility, and then they come back and actually are creating. However, in the past, they had more cooperation from everyone. When you get a society whose head is buried in the sand or buried in the dark dungeons of despair and discouragement and they are not functioning at their fullest level or their highest level, our ability to create our dreams is impeded by the very fact they're not available to do their part in a timely manner. We have made the assumption, I show up, they show up, we get it done. That's how it's been. And now I show up, they're not showing up, and it's not getting done. And it's becoming very, very frustrating. So we create expectations either way. So we want to be careful as we have this discussion tonight to become increasingly careful about where we spend our time. And as we're using our mind constructively to use this vivid visualization to see possibility, we're going to want to start factoring into our timelines where people really are, practical, common sense, so that we're not constantly putting expectations on others that they cannot or will not meet. All that will create for us is frustration. Let's go back to fantasy. This is a very common place for those who are trying to seek abundance. who are either involved in some kind of an opportunity or a program where they can recruit and sell, and like network marketing, direct selling are very common places where we find people who have these thought processes. So just pause for a moment and become conscious this week. Catch yourself when you're driving down the street. Where are you? Where are you? Because the second thing that we do is when that discouragement comes and that cortisol is in our body and we're somewhat impaired, we slide into that place we call the dark dungeon of despair and discouragement. It's a place where the light of hope, inspiration, the manifestation of ideas and impressions cannot penetrate. It just can't penetrate. However, when we're there, we want someone to come in and rescue us, to save us. Og talks about this in scroll number 10. He says we're seeking for guidance. Very interesting comment when he makes it. He says this. He says, never will I pray for the material things of the world. And I might tell you that mental rehearsal, when we are thinking in our mind, I refer to that as a form of prayer. We are expressing a desire. This is what I'd like to see in my life. Who we express that to isn't as important right now as the fact that we're expressing it either to ourselves, to our coworkers, to a higher power. It's an expression. It's a form of prayer. Never will I pray for the material things of the world. I'm not calling on a servant to bring me food. I'm not ordering an innkeeper to provide me with room. Never will I seek delivery of gold, love, good health, petty victories, fame, success, or happiness. I mean, like, what's left, right? Only for guidance will I pray, that I might know how to acquire these things. And he goes on to say, I seek not gold or garments, nor even opportunities equal to my ability. Instead, I seek to acquire ability equal to my opportunities. So as we become a better person, more aware and focused, using our mind constructively, I'm going to share with you tonight some things to do that will actually help you acquire the ability to see more opportunity, that we get to step in and do the work of that creation. But our tendency is to be in this dark place. And I've shared with you on many occasions, those of you who've been on the calls, that really dark, dark night for me. Dark night. We just, everything was gone 20 years ago. I longed to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. Those words still roll off my tongue like they did the night I said them from a guttural place. Actually, it was the morning, following a very difficult night. These feelings of, I'm willing to do whatever is necessary to finally get my prayer answered. And what I discovered, I was doing precisely what Og was telling us doesn't work. I was asking for gold and garments and petty victories and happiness and love. I wanted to be rescued. That's what happens when we're in that dark dungeon. And not only can the light of hope and the power of creation penetrate it, if it could, it would not answer that prayer. It's a prayer of ease. It's, I don't want to stretch. I don't want to grow. I don't want to face my fears and have to overcome them. I just want you to entitle me. I have a sense of entitlement. I just want to be taken care of. Can you feel how this is ruining our nation? It doesn't matter how well I do something. I get paid the same amount as the person who does it well. You can't fire me. Can you feel the entitlement that's been created in this nation? It is tragic. Tragic. Because the very asking of ease is an affront to the power of creation. Og says it clearly in scroll number 5 when he talks 4, when he talks about us being nature's greatest miracle. I am here for a purpose. A purpose. And that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink to a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all my ability to become the greatest mountain of all, and I'll strain my potential until it cries for mercy. I'm going to grow and stretch because Og knew, as does the power of creation that gave him the scrolls in the first place, that it's in that place that we find ourselves. We discover our genius. This is where the brilliance happens. This is where the excitement comes, the joy and the journey experiences. Why would that power ever give us something that would rob us of the experience of becoming that kind of person? Won't happen. So we get in that dark dungeon of despair and discouragement. It's so easy to go there. I'm speaking from experience here. But nothing of value is ever created in that place. Hogg says in scroll number 3, he's talking about persisting until I succeed. He says, I'll avoid despair. But should this disease of the mind infect me, I'll work on in despair. I'll keep my eyes on the goal above my head, this is where we're headed, and ignore the obstacles at my feet. For I know that where dry desert ends, green grass grows. Now, some of that dry desert painful? You're darn right it is. Is it difficult? Is it nerve-wracking? Can it cause sleepless nights? No question. Keeping my eyes on the goal above my head and ignoring those obstacles and pushing, driving forward. For as soon as I get past this dry desert, I know that green grass grows. It's nice to know. But if you're like me, occasionally when you're in the dry desert, there might be a scream or two. There just might be. So that's one of the greatest uses, destructive uses, of this very creative space. Because when we go into the dark dungeons of despair, and they infect our mind, we will, as vividly as we explored possibilities, as vividly as we lived out wonderful scenarios of what it's going to be like to have no more debt and no more stress and no more pain, with time freedom, financial freedom, with the same intensity, it will now do exactly the opposite. It will catastrophize. It'll create feature films about a comment someone makes with sub-characters. It'll create all kinds of dialogue. This week, I want you to really pay attention when you're driving in the car. Just stop and say, what am I thinking about? When you're on a walk, stop. What am I thinking about? Anytime you're by yourself or you're in a thought process, what are you thinking about? Capture yourself and see if you can catch yourself either living in the future, fantasizing, or playing out some negative scenario about how the whole world's going to fall apart. What we know is if we stay here, it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. We will actually create that worst-case scenario. It'll be inevitable. However, tonight, I'm going to invite everyone, those who have been through this so many times. I had a discussion the other day in a coaching call that was so precious. A coaching client said, you know, to get a new habit, I must replace it with an old one. I mean, a new one. To get rid of an old habit, I must replace it with a new one. Talking about scroll number 1. For only a new habit subdues an old habit, a bad habit. We actually have to do this. We actually will want to do this. And the very first thing we're going to want to do is our tomahawk. I want to have you resurrect this if you haven't done it in a while. If this is your first time, would you take your left hand and hold it up like a tomahawk? I use the left hand because over here on the left-hand side, that's where that dark dungeon is. Can you see it over there in your mind? Imagine it over there. Fantasy's up here to the left, up in the sky. I go there or I go there. And chop with me and repeat, not going there. Today. Not going there today. Not going there today. Despair has captured me. I'm going to work on it. I'm going to fight my way out of this. I'm going to start thinking constructively. I'm going to start doing some things that will start creating inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems. For I know, as Og says in Scroll 9, that I'm going to be as the firefly, who only gives off its light when it's on the wing, when it's in action. I'm not going to be the butterfly who preens my wings. It depends on the charity of a flower, literally sucking energy out of everything so it can live. I'm the firefly. I want to give light to the world. I'm going to make the choice to change my intention from that very secret destructive desire for ease. It's really hard to talk about, because this isn't who you are. This is just perhaps a thought process that has wanted to run your life. When we step back and you and I look each other straight in the eye, you could say, I really don't want ease. I really don't. But man, there are some thought processes of mine that just want it so badly. They're just so tired. Here's the new intention. The new intention is I'm going to engage in life. And so I'm going to get up early. I'm going to read a scroll. I'm going to do something constructive today. I'm going to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. Everything's going to be intentional. It's going to matter. I'm going to engage. I call it coming uncorked. I was just writing this chapter. It's called Awakening the Giant, Your Giant Within. And I talk about some stories about moments in my life when I uncorked, just let go of the fear, that switch flipped in my heart. I know it's possible. I've been there. I've done it so many times and still need to at times. But making that conscious decision to engage, fully engage in life. Two, I'm going to embrace principles. I'm actually going to do this. Not going there today. I'm going to start consciously forcing myself to think in one of the five constructive ways that Dave's going to share with me tonight. I'm actually going to do it. A week from now, you could come on and share with us what you did. Wouldn't that be wonderful to know that you actually applied it and had a change in your life? The change will not come. And the pain is not in the change. The pain's in the resistance to the change. So here we are, wanting to embrace principles. Three, connect with people. I've discovered something in the last few years. It's very interesting. Most people, vast majority, really have no interest in being social. Introverted. Sometimes for a variety of very good reasons, challenges in life that were just so painful. Remember what we studied the last 2 weeks of stepping into someone's world and becoming a good listener, bringing your life experience to them. You don't have to share wisdom. You don't have to fix them. You don't have to solve their problems. The gift is in the listening. The introvert can become the very best intrinsic validator. Someone just always out there talking, talking, talking. It's hard for them to stop talking. It's so much easier for you to become good listeners. This is hopeful. So that you can start having joy, because introversion generally comes from some kind of a hurt, an injury, a wound. Just feel uncomfortable around people. Hope it doesn't surprise you if I told you this was my, and occasionally can still be, my greatest challenge. My greatest challenge. Just being comfortable. I share that with you just so you'll know. Sometimes it takes great consciousness, depending on the level of my energy. So if you're in that space, be okay. It's okay. But we're going to want to start connecting with people. And we'll do that for the purpose of serving them. That makes it a lot more fun. You don't have to do anything other than serve. Show up, listen. Fourth, we want to create value. Create value. No more, well, I did the best I could, or I didn't know where it was, or I didn't know how to handle it. Well, then figure it out. Create value. Be value-driven, results-driven. Well, that's not what they told me to do. Well, if that didn't work, then let's figure out something different. Let's be the one who is proactive and creates value. Let us be that person, not the standard employee. Let us be the incredible employee that brings their light and knowledge and energy and enthusiasm to the workplace. And lastly, let's contribute. Let's not be takers. Let us be givers. When people say, oh, dear universe, give me it. I deserve it. I want my peace. Your wish is my command. That's what we want the universe to say. What are we talking about? That's all about taking. We contribute. This is where the joy comes. Engaging, embracing, connecting, creating, contributing. This is when we come alive and we start to experience joy in our life. That is now our intention. We'll be able to test that intention as we go through the five ways of using our mind constructively, because the vivid visualizations you receive will be in direct proportion to the purity of your intention. Let me restate that. The intensity with which inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems will come to you will be in direct proportion to the purity of your intention. I know we're sometimes going to have a foot over there in ease and a foot over here in service. The sooner we get both feet over here in the intention of engaging, embracing, connecting, creating, and contributing, the sooner the heavens will open and the force of creation will start to inspire us, because that we can ask for and that we can receive, because we're in absolute congruence with the very force of creation engaging in life. We've been given life, as I said earlier, to grow into a mountain, not to shrink into a grain of sand, to embrace principles. As Og said, principles are the only thing that endure. Connecting with people, greatest secret of success. I love people. Create value. Only to increase my value, I must increase my actions. I'll walk where the failure fears to walk. I'll talk when the failure remains silent. I'll work when the failure seeks rest. I will create, and I'll contribute to the world. Let's see if we can't embrace this. Begin the process. It will be a little bit of a journey. But you'll have as glorious, powerful, marvelous, inspired ideas as you may have had in fantasies. The challenge we have with that destructive way of thinking, those fantasies are pretty cool. That norepinephrine, that's such a powerful drug, it feels so good. If we weren't going to have that reaction, that autonomic reaction after, it would be hard to talk people out of fantasy. They just never create anything by it. It can never create a why big enough to have us do the work required to actually make it come into tangible reality. But we can have as glorious experiences here if our intention is truly to engage in life. So just know that. Well, I want to spend the last part of our call tonight going through a couple of these constructive ways of using our mind. Not going there today. I'm going to stay in creation, not going there today. I'm staying in creation, not going there today. I'm staying in creation, which means I'm going to stay focused on one of these five constructive ways of thinking. Now, for those of you who have been through this process, either coaching with me personally or as with a group, and now you're going through this call, I'm going to ask you to go back and revisit these pieces. Next week, we're going to have a clinic on goal setting. I'm going to keep bringing new ideas to the table of how we can use vivid visualization for goal setting. It's the most powerful thing we can do is when we see it so clearly and all of the steps required and we know why we're doing what we're doing, it's so much easier to do even the more difficult things because we have a reason for doing it because we're getting there. Before we get to goal setting, first one I want to share with you is called inspiration. Inspiration. This is an interesting mental thought process. It is saying, congruent with intrinsic validation, I have taken my sack and I've emptied it. I have picked up those wounds and I have chosen to engrave them on my heart. I'm no longer going to drag them around. I'm no longer going to want people to feel sorry for me, to comment how much sacrifice I put in. It's not about me anymore. I want to use that life experience to bless other people. So I've now engraved it on my heart. And it's like a library. When I'm listening to someone, I can kind of go back and reflect on this and go, wow, I wonder if they're having one of these moments. So we ask. May not be exact, but it certainly puts us in the ballpark. Our intuition's kind of guiding us, and we're using our life experiences. That's what this first piece is all about, inspiration. Because in the morning, we're going to say, if there is anyone, I can serve. Based on what's here in this reserve. Based on the education I've had, based on the experience I've had, the pain I've had, the wounds I've experienced, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. Just that simple. Now, interestingly, when that is our thought, it's part of our intention, we can receive inspired ideas of who those people might be. And when those inspirations come, and we act on them, and we discover that, in fact, in that moment, they truly did need us. And what's in our heart, that we've engraved on our heart, is just such a wonderful validation that we've been trusted with an inspired idea. We've been entrusted. That means we matter. It also means the person we assisted and served, they matter too. Now, you can read in the material in the studio some of those experiences that I've had. Some of them have been so sacred, so precious. Some very profound, some very simple. But always with the same feeling. And you get to a point that you want to verbalize it. After it's all over, isn't it great that God knows your name? Isn't that great? We get to show up in service. Abundance is not something we win. It's not something we seek to receive. Abundance is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. This is our opportunity to participate in that sacred process of abundance, to cast our bread out on the water. And it's been my experience that when we do so willingly and unselfishly in the service of others, people are often put on our path who can serve us. Miracles happen. Challenges that are insurmountable somehow get resolved. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Here's a common sense question. Okay, two options. I spend my day in fantasy, living what it's going to be like when I get there without any concern about how to get there. I might be $10,000 a month, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, I need $100,000 to have that happen. No idea how I'm going to really generate it, other than that's what I'm going to have. And then I end up in discouragement and despair with that cortisol and that fear dendrite running through my brain, and my hippocampus shut down, and I'm in despair and discouragement. Or life just isn't going well. I've got firestorms raging, and so I'm in the dark dungeons of despair, and I spend a day there. What have I accomplished? What would be different if I said, not going there today, and I spent the entire day, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Inspiration, serve. What would be the difference in those 2 days? One, out of congruence entirely with the force of creation. The other, a day in total partnership. Which day is going to provide joy? Which day could actually produce results? We don't serve with strings attached. But you and I both know that when we serve, miracles happen, and we're often the beneficiaries of those miracles. So, not going there today? Oops, bumped the microphone. Not going there today? Then what are we going to do? The very first thing is we're going to seek inspiration. Number two. mental rehearsal. Mental rehearsal is really fantasy with an objective. That's all it is. It's a vivid visualization. It's as vivid, it's like fantasy in that it's vivid. What separates mental rehearsal from fantasy is the intention. We're not trying to escape from anything. We're trying to discover how we can more effectively show up in service. Get the difference? Fantasy, we're escaping. Mentally rehearsal, we want to get a clear vision of how we can show up more effectively in service. Unlike fantasy, which can unfold just because of our selfish desires for ease, mentally rehearsal can unfold as vividly because of our desire to serve. How do you do this? I'll give you a simple example. I want you to pick something that's going to be happening in the next couple of days. A meeting. Might not be the most important meeting you've ever had, but consider like a meeting. Or a special dinner or a family event. And I want you to just go to that event in your mind. I've got my eyes closed for those of you on the telephone. I'm just going to go to that event and think about it. Be there. This is where I was regarding this conversation an hour and a half ago. Just mentally rehearsing. What could I say, and in what way could I say it differently? And then living out the experience. Walk into the room, sit down, have a conversation. People say, well, I'm maybe supposed to make this stuff up, Dave. Well, when your desire is to escape and have ease, nobody needs to tell you what the Ferrari looks like or the house looks like or the jet plane you're flying in. Those things just happen because the desire for ease is so intense. As our desire to serve becomes so intense, this visual will begin to unfold as clearly. We might get an idea of something to say we have never thought of before, we've never considered. We might think of a fun way to start the conversation or someone else who should be there with us. This is a fun experience. I've shared this before. I'm going to share it one more time tonight. I just love this example. I write about this in the book, Coaching Client, female, who had a very tough meeting coming up that week. And we mentally rehearsed her meeting, walking into the building, going up the elevator, walking into the room. Three people were going to be present. All of them, she thought, were there to just eat her alive. She was being very defensive and frustrated and angry because she didn't feel that it was her fault. Their dilemma between them was her fault. But they all wanted to point fingers and blame her. So in the mental rehearsal, as she's walking down the street, I could see her carrying a paper sack. And I said, what's in your paper sack? Now what I saw was three light switches. Hand one to each person, you know, you start the conversation, I'm on the hot seat. If you don't like what I say, flip the switch, fry me. Just for a little humor. She said, I have tomatoes in my sack. Oh, tell me about the tomatoes. She saw herself walking into the room, sitting down, handing each person a tomato, and telling them that they didn't like what she's saying just to throw the tomato at her. And we laughed, and all of a sudden the tension was starting to release. The need to be right, all of that systemic anger was going away, and all of a sudden it was becoming fun. And sitting in the room, I said, okay, next, I want you to tell me the first person who is to your left. Tell me who they are, she told me. Now step into their world and tell me this story from their perspective. And she discovered some things she didn't know. How was she learning this? Who was teaching this to her? The next person who's right in front of you. Step into their world and tell me about them and this situation from their perspective. And the same with the third person. It's like she had been there, sitting in the room. Everybody's got a tomato in their hands. She's responding, stepping into their world. Well, tell me more about that. All of the principles of intrinsic validation. We finished the call. She was at peace. She was at peace. Well, I was excited to hear the report from the and the three tomatoes. I was getting excited. What happened next? She said, I set them down by the side of my chair, and I stepped into the first person's world. And then the next person, and the next person. There was no anger in the room, no finger pointing. Everybody saw everybody's position, and there was a wonderful settlement of a very complex problem. I said, what happened to the tomatoes? She said, I took them home and ate them. You know, this is mental rehearsal. She was so prepared for that meeting. Now, did it happen exactly the way she saw it? And the answer is no. She'd end up handing the tomatoes. Well, then I asked the question, does that make the tomatoes invalid? And we both concluded no. That she saw the tomatoes in her mind, and what they did was add some humor and prepare her to more effectively step into someone's world. Absolutely an inspired thing that she saw in her mind. Absolutely inspired. But not something she needed in the conversation. But she absolutely needed the effect those tomatoes had on the conversation. So mental rehearsal is not about getting attached to an outcome. It's about getting ideas, getting a feeling, to be prepared to show up differently. And then we show up differently, and we create miracles in our meetings and relationships. That's mental rehearsal. Have some fun with this one. Now, at first, if you have been fantasizing in the past, this is going to be hard to get it moving until you're consciously saying, I really do want to serve this person. I really want to step in their world. I really want to understand what's going on. Can you almost feel the prayer in that request? Whether you're asking your own mind, your own ability, or a power beyond you, there is going to be something that comes to your mind that's inspired. Inspired idea, inspired impression, solution to a problem. When those come, if we have you wired to a functional MRI, we would see parts of your brain light up that you normally don't use. This is so powerful. That's what ignites our passion, our willingness to come into tangible reality, which we'll be talking about in 2 weeks, and work tirelessly without counting the costs or tracking the time. Because we want to create in tangible reality that which we've seen so clearly in our mind and all the steps for getting there. This ignites our purpose for doing the work of creation. Fantasy will never do this. It wants to skip the work of creation. How can it ignite an idea that will drive it when its very purpose, fantasy's very purpose, is to avoid it, skip it, escape from it? So as we become more effective at using our mind constructively, the more clearly these inspired ideas, impressions will come, and they'll just light our fire. Now, I have one more for tonight. It's called exploration. Exploration is taking a situation and exploring possibilities in our mind without making tangible commitments. If you've ever decorated a room or remodeled a part of a house, you know what I'm talking about. You're thinking through, okay, with the bathroom door swings that way, ooh, it hits the toilet. We need to move that. Because if we don't think through it, we're going to make problems. The purpose of exploration is to mitigate mistakes, to lessen the mistakes. And you have such vivid visualization that you can, in fact, do it. We're sitting here in our home. I remember sitting in our previous home. I wrote about this in the book. I woke up and Ramona's sitting there thinking. And I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm driving around the neighborhood in my bicycle, walking the hills with my granddaughter, or daughter-in-law, I should say. I'm decorating the house. She was going through what it would be like to live here to see if it would work, what furniture works where, and what isn't going to work. Would I enjoy being here? What kind of pressure would I feel? This is powerful, because sometimes we just want a really nice house, and we have no idea what it's going to be like to live in that neighborhood. And if we find ourselves uncomfortable, it doesn't matter how pretty it is, we don't want to be here. So you explore these possibilities. Now, it's important that we don't spend a lot of time exploring things we're not ready yet to execute on. Excuse me, that could just be a lot of wasted time. But when we get ready or getting ready to execute, let's mentally rehearse. Let's mentally rehearse the way we would state an advertisement. Let's mentally rehearse the way we would decorate a room before we buy the furniture. Let's explore how we would remodel a bathroom before we raise a hammer. These are all beautiful ways to get inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges that will ignite our passion. Well, tonight, that's where we're going to stop. These destructive thought processes, it's the same thought. It's just how we're choosing to use it. It's vivid visualization, our ability for our mind to be someplace other than where our body is at a very vivid level. Do we use it destructively or do we use it constructively? That's really a choice. The beautiful thing is that you have it. Isn't that exciting? So let's not beat ourselves up if we spent time in fantasy and it's cost us some challenges, or in discouragement and catastrophe. Let's not get caught up in that and beat ourselves up for that either. You have the gift. Let's celebrate tonight the gift. Not going to go there today. I'm going to stay in creation. I'm going to seek for inspiration. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. I'm going to mentally rehearse events that are coming up in the near term. I'm not going to go beyond them. I'm going to go to the event and work my way back so that I've got everything prepared that's necessary to execute on that one occasion more effectively. Then I'm going to explore possibilities without making tangible commitments to mitigate mistakes. If that's all we did in the next week and for the months to come, we would be well served. Now, next week, we're going to talk about a little bit about problem solving, and then we're going to go right into goal setting. We want to talk about goal setting in a relationship. Goal setting if you'd like a relationship. Goal setting if you have a business that you own. Goal setting if you're an employee. How do we use this vivid visualization to get a clear vision of what it is we want to create and all the steps to get there so that we can actually begin the process of executing? This isn't goal setting with a to-do list or a New Year's resolution. This isn't what I have to do next or I want to do this. This is action based on vision. A vision that drives passion and the mission and the creation of results. Well, thanks everyone for being with us tonight. It's such a pleasure to be with you. In terms of a scroll that we would like to have you study this week, I'd like you to go to scroll 8. I will multiply my value 100-fold. Og talks in there about that sack, that my discouragements, my inabilities, my despairs, the dark soil in which I've been planted in order to ripen. How do we set objectives so our life will crystallize? What actions do we take to actually bring them to fruition? This is a powerful, powerful scroll because we are likened into a wheat grain. We can be put in a sack, dumped in a stall, and fed to the swine, waste our life. We can be ground into flour, made into bread, broken open, and devoured by the will of others. We can do that too. Or we can be planted in the richness of the soil, sucker the seed, suck seed, grow to 100 grains of wheat. Enjoy that scroll this week. It's one of my favorite. There's a line in there, I will do the work. A failure will not do. Makes all the difference. Have a glorious week, everyone, and we'll be back with you next Tuesday night, and we're going to dive into goal setting at a very deep and wonderful level to arm you with the ability to change your life. Thanks for being with us, and have the very best day and the